Please join me in the serenity prayer.
God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. And now, tonight, our 40-minute speaker is Gloria B. Promer-Monte. Welcome her.
My name is Gloria, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Mike for inviting me. I've been here before. I see a very, very few familiar faces. I have a disease called CRS. I can't remember. You know what? I have a home group. It's in Montebello. It's called Los Amigos. I have a sponsor who I'm accountable to. I have a sobriety date that I haven't changed in 31 years. It's May the 2nd of 1982, and I don't say that to impress you. I say that to remind me of how I got here. You know, it's a good reminder for me to tell you how I got here. You know, I didn't get here feeling good and saying, yay, I'm an AA. You know, I came in here just on my knees and, you know, scratching the surface and thinking, I really hit bottom when I got to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I hit a bottom before I got here. I'm a Native American, and I'm from Arizona. My real name is Morning Glory Marie, and I hated that name growing up. I hated being a Native American. We used to be called Indians, and I like that better. We're all Native Americans. We're all from here, if you were born in America. I believe with all my heart that God has always done for me what I've never been able to do for myself. You know, God has carried me. You know, when I read the footprints before I got sober, I didn't believe what I read. But when I got to you and I worked the steps and I worked the traditions and I did what I was supposed to do, I came to believe that God carried me through my hardest times before I got to you. Because if He hadn't carried me, I don't think I would have made it here. You know, I'm a product of two Native Americans, Apaches, you know, and Apaches attack at night. And my parents always fought, you know. My mom was a neurotic. She didn't drink, but she took a lot of pills. And she worked a lot, you know, when we were on the reservation. I remember being a little girl, this little, really little. And I remember my mom always coming home and demanding things from my sisters. And I remember as a little girl that I don't remember my mother ever telling me, I love you, Gloria, you know, I love you. I don't remember my mom ever saying that. I've tried to remember, you know, when I listen to speakers, that maybe it'll be revealed to me, and it hasn't been revealed to me. But I know because of you and the God that I found here that my mother did the best she could. You know, I know that today. I wish I would have known it back then, because I used to pray to God, because I lived, like I said, on the reservation, and we lived near the mission. And I used to go to the mission. I was a little girl, almost 6 years old. I remember I used to go to the mission. I used to steal a candle. See, I'm a liar, a cheat, and a thief. I stole a candle and that was already lit, you know, those red candles. And I put it in front of the altar and I said, God, please take my mother. If you take my mother, I'll be the goodest girl in the world, you know. And I meant it. I'd be a good girl, you know. I would pray every day. I think I prayed for like maybe 2-3 weeks, maybe a month, and nothing happened. So one day I thought, you know, I have bright ideas. I don't know about you, but I always had these good ideas, and nothing ever came of them. And I remember stealing a candle and going off into the desert and getting in front of a saguaro, you know, the ones that look like this. And kneeling down, and that candle's lit because I stole it lit. And I remember kneeling down and started praying to the devil. And I told the devil, if you take my mom, I'll give you my soul. It's a prayer of a little girl. At that moment, I meant it because I hated her with a passion. I hated her so much, I wanted her dead. And I prayed and I prayed every day. I would come home from school, do my homework, and do what I had to do, and my mom wasn't gone. God didn't want her, neither did the devil. And I was stuck. I was stuck. You know, and we moved off the reservation when I was 12, and I went to school, Catholic school on the reservation, and you know, my mom dressed me real funny. My mom dressed me with the flower sacks. You know, she would make our skirts and our blouses out of flower sacks. And I usually had different flowers on different patterns on all of the skirt. You know, there would be like a full skirt. It would be roses here, daisies here, and other flowers in the back. And my blouses would be the same. And, you know, and I wore those to school. And when we left the reservation and moved, my father moved us off the reservation, took us to a little neighborhood in Phoenix, it was called Golden Gate. And here I am, 12 years old, and I'm going into the eighth grade, going to be 13 pretty soon, and I go into this school, and I had never seen so many Mexicans, Chicanos, you know. I saw these girls with big hairdos, you know, all the way up here, the beehives. And I saw these girls with the sweaters that button up the back, the cashmere sweaters, and the tight skirts. I know there's some women that can relate. And there was, there were boys, of course, in school. And my mom dressed me, like I said, very funny. And she would braid my hair, and she would braid it so tight that I didn't look native, you know, I looked like Asian. And I would get so angry at her because, you know, my eyes were so stretched back that I could barely blink. And so I would get to school and I would take the braids off. And sometimes I wouldn't take them off. And when I didn't take them off, the boys would come up behind me and they would grab my braids because they were really long. They would go like this and go, come on, giddy up. And they would ask me if I knew how to track bear. Or if, you know, if I knew how to catch a deer or whatever. And I would tell them no, you know, and they would laugh at me. And, you know, bullying me was what they were doing. And they would walk around going, how? And, you know, I wish they would come to me now and I'd tell them chapter 5. That's how. You know. But nobody has come up to me and gone how to me, you know. And I dare my husband to do it. Yeah, he won't do it because he knows this Apache attacks at night. I wanted to tell you too. I've been married a long time. You know, I've been married for 24 years. Been with the same man. We lived in sin the first 4 years, though, and so we've been married 24 and together altogether 29 years. And you know, that's a first for me. And anyway. On my 13th birthday, my grandma had a cake for us and for me and another cousin who had turned 13. And so we went to grandma's and they had a little powwow and stuff. And you know, and I thought nothing of it. 6 months, you know, I mean, I'm 13 and I'm playing with dolls. I'm playing with little dolls in the room, my grandma's house. And grandma's house had no carpet, no nothing. She made little rugs out of the wool that she would get or whatever. And she would make these little rugs and she would put them there for me to play with my dolls. I'm 13 playing with these little dolls that were made out of corn and the corn hair from the corn. And, you know, real pretty little dolls. And my cousin came and one of my cousins came in running and went to talk to grandma. And then he came into where I was sitting, and he says, "Didn't you just turn 13?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "You can come out with us now." And I thought, okay, never to return to those dolls, never. And I went with him, and he opened up the cabinet in the back of Grandma's house, and Grandma was always a happy camper. She was always smiling. She was always singing. She was a happy camper, you know, telling us stories all the time, and now I know why, okay? And Grandma had this cabinet in the back full of jars, those mason jars, which I thought was water. And my cousin says to me, here, take one. So I took one. He took two. Another cousin took three. And I'm thinking to myself, how come I only get one and they get more? You know, the greed sets in right at the beginning. So anyway, I went with them. There were about 15 of us. And we ran off into the desert like wild Indians. And when we got to our destination, it's in July, okay? This is in July. And it's 120 in the shade. And they had this big old bonfire with dry cactuses and all kinds of old chairs and rugs. And we're all parading around the fire like you were going on warpath. And finally my cousin stopped and walked over to the side, popped his bottle, his jar, and took a drink. I mean, it was the longest drink I ever saw. He just gulped it down, and I thought, oh, must be water, right? So I did the same thing. I popped it, and I chug-a-lugged it like three big gulps, and I froze. You know, I pulled that off my mouth. I froze, and you would have thought, Gloria, don't do that no more. I felt like smoke was coming out of my ears. It was coming out of my nose, my eyes, and then finally it came out of my mouth. And then I drank some more. And I wanted to fit in. I didn't know that. I wanted to fit in. And what happened is that I don't remember after that. I went into a blackout. When I came to, I had pee on me. I had vomit on me. I was filthy, and I was on Grandma's floor. And a bunch of my other cousins were on Grandma's floor. And you know, she singled me out for some reason. She told me I stunk. And I think she singled me out because I had vomit. They didn't have vomit on me. And I told her, I said, you know, Grandma, I said, it wasn't me, it was him, you know. And I like blaming other people for things that I've done. I don't know about you. I like pointing the finger and never looking at the other three that I point at myself, you know. Anyway, I blamed it on my cousin. And I repeated it again 6 months later. I'm 13 and a half. And I took two jars this time, and I drank both jars, and I went into a blackout. To make a long story short, I stabbed my cousin multiple times. The one that took me out into the cabinet where Grandma had her booze. And I went to jail. I was a young kid. You know, I was a little girl going into a woman's prison, and I was tried and convicted, and because it happened on the reservation, you know, I had to do federal time. And I was with the big girls. The youngest girl there was about 18 or 19, and they put me with her. And I had an aunt that went to prison. They called her the Apache Queen. She had killed four policemen and took them for a joyride in a paddy wagon. Thank God family goes to prison when you do. I don't know about you, but it was okay for me because she protected me, you know. She was buffed. I mean, she was buffed. She had been there maybe 4 or 5 years, so she was already buffed. She had a flat top haircut, and everybody was afraid of her. And she took me under her wing, and she protected me. She got me a job in the kitchen, and one day she came up to me and she said, Gloria, I want you to get me a gallon of vanilla. And I thought, what is she going to do with a gallon of vanilla? You know, I thought, is she going to bake cookies in her cell? You know, do they have something? I don't know. And I followed her. And when I followed her, she picked up a glass about as big as this. And she put the vanilla in there and she drank it down. And I thought, I thought, vanilla tastes sweet in a cookie and in a cake, so it must taste good when you drink it. Don't try it. because it burns all the way going down and it burns all the way coming up, because I did it. And I got hooked on it. I drank it every day all the years that I was there. I was there for 4 years, and I learned, I got my GED there, I got my my cosmetology license, and when I left with those two things. I left with gate mining, and I left with the disease of alcoholism and didn't even know it. I did a lot of other stuff in there, anyway, when I got home, I was on the bus, and the bus left me off in Phoenix, and I saw this big department store, and I went in there, and I had this money, and I thought, wow, I'll go in there, and I'll buy myself a red dress, and I did, a pair of stilettos about that high, and stockings, and never thinking to buy two dresses, three dresses, or whatever. They were only like $5, $7. The stilettos were like $6. That'll tell you how long ago it was. And when I got home, nobody was home but my father. And I got ready and I left. And before I left, I remember the girls telling me, put razor blades in your beehive, you know, because you're going to a bar and you might get into a fight. And if they pull your hair, they'll cut their hands, right? But see, they never told me to put the razor blade this way. They told me I'd put them in this way. And when I'd come home, and I'd be drunk, really drunk, and I tried to get those razor blades out of my hair, I cut my hands doing it. Cut a lot of my hair off, too. And I did that for 3 nights, and I thought the fourth night, I thought, no, I'm no more. You know, and I think I went to that bar for 4 nights until Friday, and on Friday they had, like, they had it rearranged in the bar. It's the same bar that I went to it, and they had the bandstand. They had drums and guitars up there, so they were going to have live music. And to make a long story short, the music started, and I'm twirling in the same dress, in the same shoes, in the same stockings, and I'm twirling around on the floor dancing with this guy, and the guy from the band comes downstairs and down to the dance floor, stands between me and the guy that I'm dancing with, and he says, God, you're pretty. Nobody had ever told me I was pretty. Nobody. Except the women in prison and my grandma. And you know, and the only reason they said I was pretty was because I reeked of vanilla when I was coming out of my pores. And anyway, when he said that, I got a bright idea. And a week later, I married him. And you talk about going from one institution into another. Holy cow, that was an institution, you know, and I didn't know he drank the way I did. I didn't know that he did other stuff, you know, and little by little I started finding out that he was doing other things, you know, and the reason I found out was because when he would come home, I would clean out his jacket, and one day I was cleaning out his jacket, and I found 4 little white pills, and I've already had like 3 kids by this time, and I'm cleaning out of the jacket, and I see these little white pills, or white crust, the big ones. And the curiosity got the better of me. And, you know, I don't know about you, I'm a pig. If one's good, 10 is better. So I ate all 4 of them. And let me tell you, they were strong, because it lasted a long, long time. It seemed like I cleaned house for a month. I was doing all kinds of things. I was cleaning I even got to outside. I waxed the carport, you know, I was cleaning the leaves off my roses, cutting them, trimming them, making them look pretty. And one day that I'm out there cleaning the leaves off, she comes out and she says, Gloria, what are you doing? And I said, what do you mean? I'm cleaning my house and cleaning my roses. And she says, no, no, at 2:00 in the morning with a mariachi. And I said, what do you mean? She says, yeah, you got mariachis going, you got oldies going, you got all this music going at 2 or 3 in the morning. What's going on? I said, well, we're having a party. Come and join us. And I was having a party. And She says, no, thank you. And I said, you know, I found these pills and in my husband's jacket. And I said, and I want to get more. And she said, those are illegal. She, and the reason she said it was because her husband was a policeman. And she said, but I can take you where you can get something different, you know, because you look like you need to lose weight. And so she took me to this doctor. And to make a longer story short, after she brought me back, before I left the pharmacy with a little vial of pills, I took three. And when I got home, I looked through the phone book and got three more doctor's appointments the same day. You know, so I was like this in the doctor's office and going back and forth to do other doctors and stuff. And, you know, because I'm a greedy alcoholic. I need more of a lot of anything. And I need it now, not tomorrow. Half measures availed me nothing even then. And I wasn't going to take one a day, no. And anyway, what happened is that I got hooked on that, and but it enhanced my drinking. I'm an alcoholic first and foremost. You know, I love to drink. I love what it did to me. You know, it made me blonde. At that time, my hair was dark. And it made me blonde and blue-eyed, I guess. And because I didn't want to be who I was, I never did. And what happened is a lot of insanity happened in the marriage. You know, there was a lot of abuse on my part and his part. You know, I'm not gonna stand here and say that I was an abused wife and, you know, poor me. You know, I abused him too. You know, I remember he passed out and I used to get the broom and I used to beat him with it. You know, when he was passed out, and I did it on several occasions in one year, and you know, because that was the only way I could get back at him, because I could never when we were fighting, I could never hit him because he was tall and he was had long arms and he would just hold me back with his hand, and someone had come to my door and said that if my husband had a drinking problem, there was a place for me. And this lady took me to Al-Anon. And I went to Al-Anon, you know, and I didn't like what I heard. I saw too many women smiling. They didn't have the problems that I did, you know. And I sat always in the back. And they always came to say hi to me, and I would just, like, not answer them, you know, just sit and not do anything. But I went religiously twice a year for 2 years, and I took what I wanted. You know, I stopped enabling the alcoholic. I hid my booze all over the house, and women know. Women, I'm talking about me, but I'm a woman, and we have good hiding places where men never look. You know, and he never found my stash. You know, so I was always drinking, and he would wonder why how I was drinking if there was no booze in the house. And anyway, he came home for the last time to beat me for the last time. And he didn't come home to beat me because that's what he wanted to do. He came home, and he was the kind of drunk that was always smiling. I hated a smiling alcoholic like him. He would come home and be happy and what's for dinner, and I would start poking and instigating, and before you know it, we're fighting. See, if you're happy, if I'm not happy, you can't be happy. I always told him things about the kids, and he would go and spank the kids and stuff. Anyway, what happened is the last time that he came, I caused such an ugly fight. Because I called him ugly names, like names that include his mother and the dog, you know. And he didn't like that too well. And so we got into this big fight, and we were 12 years married, and it was to be the last time. When I went to the hospital, because he dislocated my back in two places and he broke my jaw. I remember coming to in the hospital, feeling hungover, and feeling no pain, and thinking, what am I going to do? Where are my babies? You know, I had four boys by this time. And I called my brother. I had the doctor call my brother because I couldn't talk. I was writing my little notes. He called my brother to help me start getting a divorce. See, because Al-Anon said, don't make a decision your first year. So I had gone religiously twice a year. So the second year, I could make a decision. And I listened a lot, you know. And what happened is I divorced him, and I won the house, the car, and the kids. And on December the 5th of 1975, December the 4th of 1975, my kids and I moved back into the house, and we made plans for Christmas and one of my kids' birthdays. He was going to turn 9, and I did what I did every night. Every night, I drank myself to sleep until I passed out. That night before I put my boys to sleep, I told them, like I told them every night, that I loved them, because I wanted them to remember that their mama loved them. And because I don't remember my mom telling me that. So what happened is that I came to, and I'm outside in the front yard, and people are running around, and I could hear the fire engines and people running all over the place. And my ex-husband came during the night, and he burnt my house, and I lost my four boys. They were 11, 10, 9, and 6. And I can tell you that today. But for the grace of God, you know, I can tell you that. Yesterday was one of my son's birthdays. He would have been 48. On the 17th, my baby would have been 44. On the 3rd of October, my oldest son would have been 49. In December, my other son would have been 47. And I tell you that not to feel sorry for me, but to walk with me through it. You know, God did for me this year what I couldn't do for myself. That's why I'm here. So you can walk with me through it, you know. It never ceases to amaze me how God works in my life, you know. I became catatonic almost immediately after I realized my kids were gone, you know, because I saw the firemen carrying out little bundles. They put me in a hospital. I always called it 24th and Van Buren. It's a mental hospital, like Metropolitan State Hospital. And I was there like maybe 10 or close to 11 months. And I came to in October, the latter part of this month, I came to, and I remember hating God. I remember that first thought, that it was God. He was punishing me for what I did to my cousin. And I really believed that. I really believed that God was punishing me. And you know, in it, it wasn't God. I know that today. And I signed out of that hospital on November the 4th of 1976. And my husband, who I'm married to today, that's his sobriety day. And I always tell him that God was getting him ready for me, you know. And he goes, yeah, right. I left that hospital because the Al-Anons and the alcoholics came to visit me for the last time, and I asked for help, and they sent me out here to California to start a new life. And the last 5 years of my drinking were done here in California. I found Hollywood, I found long eyelashes, I found mini skirts, I found high-heeled boots. Oh my God, they come all the way to your thighs. And I thought, oh my God. And then my hair was big, I could wear it real big, and the lashes, oh, I loved it. I used to wet perm my hair, and I used to work it out into an afro. I love the afro look, and I have pictures of it. And I got a job at the VA hospital in Sepulveda, and I got myself a little car, so I started cruising down Hollywood and, you know, just doing stupid things. And I found myself coming to in strange places and not knowing how I got there. I would come to in a motel, and I would wonder who was under the sheet there, you know, and I would raise it up. If it looked good, I would uncover it. If it didn't, I'd cover it back up. And let me tell you, sometimes I woke up with a sheet over my head. Okay? And you know, and The insanity in my life continued. My first husband committed suicide. He couldn't live with the fact that he lit the match that took our children. And anyway, I met a man where I worked at the VA hospital in Reseda, or out there in that area. And I met him at the commissary. I had my afro. I love Barbara Streisand and her afro. And I was wearing a three-piece suit, just like Barbara Streisand, and some big old platform shoes. And I remember my afro wasn't like it was when I first fixed it the night before. It was like real loose. And my glasses, I had those big Sophia Loren glasses. And the glasses were holding up this part of the afro so they wouldn't go further. And if I shook my head like this, it would probably flop all over. And if I took my glasses off, it would pull my eyelashes off. So, I mean, I was a masterpiece at that, you know. I mean, I was looking good that morning, you know. I had gone from the bar to work. And all I did was spray perfume and, you know, do a little here and do a little there. And I go to work and I have to replace the girls, you know, I have to relieve the girls on their breaks at the commissary. And so I did that, and I'm walking around and I'm hungover, and this guy comes up to me and he takes one look at me and he goes, "I know you, you're from San Fernando. How could you see me? I couldn't even see myself when I'd go to the bathroom." And to make a long story short, he was an alcoholic. And I told him I was an Al-Anon. And we were going to trudge the road of happy destiny. And the poor guy, I took him on a roller coaster. I took him on a ride he has never forgotten. And his name is Alex. My now husband's name is Alex. And my now husband's ex-wife was named Gloria. She passed away like 2 years ago. God rest her soul. And you know, and my husband and I never forget who we are because of that, of his ex and my ex, right? And anyway, this guy that said that he knew me, you know, I don't know how I did it, but I never gave anybody my right number. But I guess I gave it to him because he called me. And he asked me out on a date, and I said, okay. And when he came to pick me up, he had a blanket. I thought he was when I saw that blanket, I thought he was Richard Ramirez. And I said, "Why do you have that blanket?" And he says, "Oh, because it's cold and my car doesn't have a heater." And I thought, oh, how sweet. A week later, I moved in with him. And something about a week, you know. It's too long, I guess. And I moved in with him, and I married him on Thanksgiving. And you know what happens when you marry people on Thanksgiving? You marry turkeys. At least I did. And he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to Al-Anon maybe once a year. I drank, and I did a lot of other stuff. I got a job at an aircraft company there in Burbank, and I did a lot of other things. And I'm not proud of the things that I did, but I did. And you know, I finally hit a bottom, not a bottom, like Skid Row. Right here is my Skid Row. I couldn't get clean. It didn't matter how many showers I took or how many baths I took. If I put bleach in it, I couldn't get clean. You know, I felt filthy and dirty. I remember my last drink. It was in Burbank. I had a bottle of Michelob, and I threw it out the window. And I didn't know it was going to be my last drink. That was on May the 1st of 1982. And you know, and I used to go to AA retreats. And nobody ever told me there that I was an alcoholic. They knew because they told me afterwards that they knew because I reeked of alcohol. But nobody said, "Hey, Gloria, you're an alcoholic. You don't belong here." They never threw me out of anywhere. And I'm forever grateful for that because I wouldn't be standing here today. And what happened is that I went to one of those retreats and I talked to a priest and I told him my whole life story except about my drinking. And when I woke up Monday morning after that retreat, I called that same priest and I said, "You know what? I am an alcoholic." And he said, "God, Gloria, it's about time, you know." And he knew. I didn't know. He knew. I knew back in the back of my mind, but I didn't want to admit it. And when I admitted that to him, he says, well, you've just now taken the first step. You know, now you've got to go to meetings and raise your hand. I didn't want to do that. You know, we turn around when we want to see the newcomers, you know, like we do here. I want to welcome you newcomers. You know, this is a good place. This is a happy place. You know, it gets a little harder as you stay sober, but it gets better on the other end. It has for me, you know. And the birthday people, happy birthday, you know. That's what I look forward to, seeing people take cakes, because that's like a stepping stone every year, a step up, you know, from that gutter that I came from. I was like 3 months sober, going to meetings, because they suggested 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to more than 90 meetings in 90 days. I went on motorcycles, cars, bicycles, you know, I went any way that I could get to a meeting. And I had my own car, but I didn't trust myself to drive. And I got to meetings, and Burbank was my home group. And on Thursday night, one night, they asked me to come up and share, and I couldn't. I said, my name is Gloria, and I'm an alcoholic, and I started to cry. And I cried, and I cried, and I cried. And someone timed me. I cried for 15 minutes at the podium, and nobody pulled me off the podium. You know, and when I was done crying, I said, thank you, and I walked off. And you guys applauded me. I thought you guys were crazy. I thought you were going to 86 me from here. And what happened is at the end of the meeting, there's two doors like there are here. And I was running out that door after the prayer. And I was running fast because I wanted to get to that restaurant where there's a meeting after the meeting and you can rub elbows with the old timers. Back then, that's what we did. You know, and we would talk and we would hear the war stories. We would hear the steps. We would hear the tradition, the concept. We would hear everything. And I was running out there, and this woman grabs me by the back of my neck and pulls me back. And she says, I want to talk to you. They were ruthless back then. They were mean back then. And this lady pulled me back, and she said, I'm going to sponsor you. And I'm thinking, God, I thought I had choices. You know, that's what I heard at meetings. And she said, you don't have a choice. And she was the best thing that could have happened for me. She taught me how to dress. She taught me how to comb my hair. She taught me how to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the 12 and 12. You know, she taught me how to do the things that women do. You know, I didn't know what women did. I only knew one thing, you know. And she took me through the steps. I didn't want to. I rebelled against the third step. I didn't want to turn my will and my the care. I didn't want to turn my will and the care. I'm nervous. Can you tell? I didn't want to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it. I didn't understand Him, and I didn't want to take that step. I told her, I'm not getting on my knees for you or anybody else. I'm just not doing it. And she's already on her knees, and she yanked me down. She's a little Anglo, this short, and. She yanked me down, and she started to recite that third step prayer, and I cried like a baby, you know, and I went on to work the rest of the steps, and my life has never been the same. I live a good life. I live a good, clean life today, you know. I want to thank Martha for letting me drive her car to come up here. You know, I asked her yesterday, and she said yes, and when Mike asked her if she wanted to leave the meeting, she just froze, but she knew not to say no. You know, because her sponsor was sitting right next to her. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sponsor today. My first sponsor died when I was 5 years sober. And I was already living in sin with my now husband. And I wasn't, you know, the funny part was when I met my third husband, he is three. When I met my third husband, I had already known him long before, and I was 2 years sober when he called me for a phone number of a friend of ours, and I asked him, you know, I was already divorced from that second husband. I wasn't going out with that boyfriend that I had, and I asked him, how would you like to go to the convention with me? And he said, okay. And I said, be there at 6. He didn't show up till 7. And guess what? This girl waited. I never waited for anybody. And thank God I waited, because I could have missed the life that I have today with this man. He's restored my faith in man. You know, he has three kids that he lets me call kids, my kids. He has a son who's 48, another son who's 46, and a daughter who's 42. And we get along. Most of the time we get along, you know. I love my and I have five grandchildren. You know, I have three granddaughters. One's 24, she's ready to have a baby any day. The other one is 14, going on 30. And then the five-year-old, yeah, she's 5 years old, you know, and she wants everything. She can get on, 5 years old, and she's on the computer like a pro. You know, they know how to do all that. And my life is good today. I have, like I said, I have a sponsor. I've had good sponsors. I've had three good sponsors in all of my sobriety. And they've all been married, long-term marriages. The sponsor that I have now, she lives in Beaumont. She used to live in Blythe. Her name's Angie. And she's been my sponsor for the last 15 years. And I'm accountable to her. I call her every Monday at 9 o'clock. I work the steps. And you know, and my life is good. You know, it's not perfect. I'm not going to tell you that I've been a perfect AA member, because I haven't. I drove 19 years without a driver's license. I took women to meetings. God will keep you unharmed. And the big book tells me that I'm 109. If your motive is right, God will keep you unharmed. And that's what I used as a good excuse not to get my license. And but what's in the dark will come into the light. And I got a ticket. And I paid the price. I almost went to jail, because it was a suspended license, because I had seizures a long time ago. That's another story. And but I took care of it. I got my license within 2 weeks after I got the ticket. And now I'm legal. For the last almost 10 years, I've been legal driving. And my life is good. You know, my life is good. And again, if you're new, welcome. And if you're an old-timer, stay, please. You're the heartbeat that keeps us going. You know, without you, I couldn't do it. Without the direction that I get, I couldn't do it. Everything that I've learned and every answer that I've ever gotten in regards to a life change has been in the book for me. You know, the God that I found here is because of you. And you know, one of the things I'm going to share this, I got forgiveness here. You know, and the way I got forgiveness was to forgive myself first. And I was able to forgive my husband, my first husband, who lit the match that killed our kids. I was able to forgive him. And I have a little spot in my heart for him. I forgave my mother, you know, and I have love for her in my heart today. I forgave my brother. I forgave my sisters, you know, for how they treated me. And they're all in my heart. They're all in my heart. And you taught me that without you, I wouldn't be nothing. Without God, I certainly wouldn't be nothing, you know. And again, if you're new, welcome. And Mike, thanks again for asking me. It was an honor and a privilege. Thank you.